This week on football, Pedro Porro makes a young fan's year. Neville celebrates Cobby's wonder goal. Galatasaray play against themselves to win the Turkish Cup. Casemiro apologises. Messi stops for fans. And Ronaldo is sent off as he spins conspiracy theories. Welcome to this week's episode. It is me, your host, Alex, and I am here for all your weekly football nonsense. We have got a cracking show lined up. Stay tuned right to the end for an unbelievable fan-captured goal of the week. We've also got a two lies and a truth, and we'll be doing my team of the week. What has happened this week, guys? It's been a pretty crazy week of football. We've had midweek games. We've had weekend massive games, and then we're back again for some Champions League games, massive fixtures, and plenty of Championship and League 2, League 1 as well. It's actually Tuesday night when I'm recording this, so in the background, I've actually got Arsenal versus Bayern, and what a game this is. On the other side of it, there's also Man City versus Real Madrid, and that's just gone 2-1. Crazy game in the opening couple of minutes. But yeah, some brilliant football this weekend. Absolutely loved it. I was at Old Trafford for the Man United-Liverpool game. Bit of a strange experience. I went up with two Liverpool fans and we had a pretty good discussion and a pretty unbiased discussion on the way there and on the way back. And I think at the start of that day, I did say to them both, I said, would you shake my hand for two all before the game? And they both said no. And weirdly enough, it ended up being two all. And I think a pretty good result in terms of, you know, we didn't get beat as a Man United fan. I think a pretty good result in all, if you take into the context for Liverpool, that they could have quite easily dropped points there and more than just one. I think a defeat just changes psychology, particularly in this run-in, which is going to be so tight. I think, yeah, to score in the last sort of 5-10 minutes for Liverpool is a big goal for them. They were both gutted coming back, and it was a very quiet away end coming out of Old Trafford. I watched them all come out and, yeah, very subdued. It almost felt like they thought they'd lost the league at that point. I think they're being dramatic. I think there's a long way to go. There's still big moments ahead. But yeah, I thought massive game. Cobby Mainoo's goal. Wow, what a strike. 18 years old, just madness. And I actually thought when watching that game, and I said to the two Liverpool fans in the car on the way up, and it sounds obvious, but I always feel like the best team wins the league every season. And that sounds so obvious, but when watching every team throughout the season, I feel the sense of this is the best team in the league. I've never felt that about Liverpool this season. And in fact, I haven't really felt that about City. I have felt that about Arsenal, and I've got them in the background at the moment playing Bayern. And I do, there's something about them that I just feel like the other teams lack, and it's a mentality. And I think what encapsulated that perfectly was at the weekend when Gabriel blocked João Pedro's strike, and the game was as good as won. It was 3-0. I think there was, what, 5-10 minutes to go, and João Pedro hit the ball inside the box. Gabriel got across the block and celebrated like he just scored a 90th minute winner. And that, for me, probably seems quite small, but the way the whole Arsenal team gathered round and celebrated it like it was a goal, but not just like a 3 or 4 nil, more so just because of the clean sheet. And I think it just, yeah, it's a good analogy for the progression that Arteta has made in terms of mentality in that side, that they're not the same Arsenal side that got beat last season by City when pretty much the league title was in their hands. This is a different team. It's a team that knows that they can win this league and has confidence. And they're not just winning games when you expect them to, but they're winning difficult games. I think a lot of people alluded to the fact that Brighton was a difficult game. It was a difficult match. And it almost felt like it was easy. And you see that sort of performance from title winning sides. And I did feel that about Arsenal. They're my team to go and win the league, I think. Obviously, there's a slight preference if they do over City and Liverpool. But at the end of the day, Jurgen Klopp said it as well after the game. He said, you know, the best team will win the league. And we'll see who that is. And it's so obvious, but it's so true. I didn't feel watching that Liverpool side that they were the best team in the league at the weekend, even though they absolutely battered Man United, and Man United got lucky on multiple occasions. But that's Man United being a terrible side. You know, Brighton are a good side, and they looked bang average against Arsenal, and Arsenal barely let them get a sniff. 3-0, comfortable in probably arguably one of their toughest fixtures in the run-in for this Premier League title. So yeah, I think Arsenal. Champions League wise, you know, I really thought, my feeling was that Real Madrid were going to go and do it, and I felt like someone like Jude Bellingham would pull them over the line. This fixture now with City would have been, in my opinion, their biggest test if they hadn't reached the final and then got City. The fact that they're winning at the moment, we don't know what it's going to be. Obviously, tomorrow morning, you'll be watching this and listening to this and you'll know the result, but I just feel like if they can get past City, I don't know who stops them. And I don't fancy Arsenal in the Champions League. I do fancy them in the league, but I just think Real Madrid, there's something about them. Yeah, it's so obvious. Real Madrid win the Champions League, you know, half the time. But yeah, if they can beat City, I think that is the team that wins the Champions League this season. Championship, let's look at a couple of sides that are going well. Ipswich beaten at the weekend. That is a title race in the Championship. You don't know who's going to win it. We've got one in the Premier League. We've got one in the Championship. Leicester have all the credentials. They have everything in place to go and win that league. But just when you think they're going to get away, someone beats them and they get pegged back. And then Ipswich take that lead and they take that initiative and then they lose. And now Southampton, can they take that lead, or can Leeds take that lead and then they lose? Like, it's a crazy league this season and I absolutely love it. It's been brilliant. And as far as players that are coming through in that league, I noted early in the season, Ellis Sims had a feeling that it could be a big season for him. Never really got game time in the Premier League. Was he a Premier League player? We don't know yet. Still so young. Coventry take a chance on him and a gamble. And he had a tough start to the season. Now he's on a run that is unbelievable. It's almost like Ellis Sims scores every week. He's playing tonight. I actually don't know any of the scores other than the games that I'm watching in the background of the Champions League. But yeah, I think massive for Coventry. And I did want to mention them because a lot of the times you'll only see people talk about Championship sides that get promoted or win the league. You very rarely hear about, you know, you don't get plaudits for players that are sort of mid-table or even pushing for a promotion spot. You hear the ones that are pushing for automatic and maybe second, third, fourth. Coventry, massive well done. What they've had over the last couple of seasons, they shouldn't be anywhere near it, but yeah, they seem to replace great players as well. They let Gyökeres go. They brought in Hadji Wright, who's banging them in, and Ellis Sims, who's banging them in now. So brilliant. Now, and obviously, by the way, massive fixture for them. Forget the Championship and winning promotion. They've also got a massive tie, an FA Cup semi-final at Wembley against Man United. And I don't think there's any Man United fan who's particularly confident in that. So we'll see how that goes. In the background, Harry Kane's just scored for Bayern. I did mention I didn't fancy Arsenal in the Champions League. It's early days. But Bayern have got no fans, by the way. Arsenal filled that stadium pretty much because I think Bayern fans are protesting or something. So they've not travelled or they've not gone inside the stadium. What an opportunity for Arsenal to dominate that, get the atmosphere up. And Harry Kane's just banged in a penalty. Champions League football. And Bayern are awful. I've watched them plenty of times this season. They've been terrible. So, yeah, it's a very different thing winning a Champions League. It's a very different thing winning a league. I think they've got the mentality for the league. I think it's a bit early for them for the Champions League. Sounds weird, but yeah. Let's do my team of the week. I feel like, by the way, every time I do these teams of the week, they're the teams that I watch. So obviously, I'd imagine the teams that I watch will usually be the same ones. Like, I'm always going to watch Man United. I'm probably going to watch the top four teams because they're always on TV. I try and be as eclectic with my football watching and viewing choice as I can. I watch a lot of Serie A. I watch a lot of French League. Don't watch much Spanish unless Real Madrid or Barcelona are playing. But you're going to hear a lot of the same names. But I actually do think that a lot of these players deserve to be talked about as well. So here's my team of the week. In goal, Andre Onana. Right back, Rico Lewis. Centre back, Willy Cambuala. Alongside him, Gabriel. Left back, Federico DiMarco. Central midfield, Alexis McAllister. Phil Foden alongside him. Bruno Fernandes alongside him. Right wing, Cole Palmer. Left wing, Luis Diaz. And striker, Kai Havertz. I want to talk about a couple of these players. Let's highlight some. Bruno Fernandes this week. I can't explain how good Bruno Fernandes is, but I also can't say it without caveating it with how frustrating Bruno Fernandes is. I didn't think he had a particularly great game against Liverpool. I thought he was really good in a few games where he hasn't scored this season. They happened to score this week, and it was probably a goal that three or four players in the Premier League would score. And I'm not saying they couldn't have taken it on and maybe beaten Van Dijk and gone and scored 1-1, but to take it first time like that, beat the goalkeeper, and then it's ended up nestling in the bottom corner. In that size of fixture, it's magnificent. So Bruno Fernandes, yeah, put him in. What a player. What an underrated player. What an overhated player he is. Cole Palmer, we spoke about him last week, me and Vince. Cole Palmer's almost... it's almost beating every week. He's beating how good we think he can be or he has been. And against Man United, hat trick, just every game. Yeah. And I think Vince put it really well the other week, 21 years old, you're watching it, expecting him to do something. That's the biggest compliment you can pay to a Premier League footballer at a club the size of Chelsea, that at 21, you're kind of the go-to guy. That might be a reflection on the rest of the Chelsea side, but I think he's been absolutely fantastic. Nailed on to go to the Euros this summer. Does he start over Saka? I don't know. I'm not having that personally, but I think what a replacement if we get an injury. Luis Diaz. Here's Liverpool's problem. They love Darwin Nunez. They absolutely adore him. So when he isn't putting the performances in, it's difficult to then go and criticise him. Your front three as a whole has been unbelievable, if not the best in the world, for probably the last best part of almost a decade. I mean, Firmino when he came in, Salah when he came in probably 5, 6, 7 years ago, and Mane. You're not going to get that same level of performance out of those players. Speaking to Liverpool fans, match-going Liverpool fans this week, you realise that, yes, they love Darwin Nunez, but I think there's creaking. There's almost like this, we cannot afford to have a striker who is not bang on it every week in the biggest moments. And I think that is where Jamie Carragher said it on commentary or in post-match interview. He said they massively miss Jota because Jota in those games scores those goals. He gets up for those big occasions and he's a finisher and he's clinical. Darwin Nunez isn't that yet. He might be, but he's not that yet. And I think a lot of Liverpool fans thought or tried to convince themselves that he was. I've been saying what a good player, but what a strange player for quite a while. And that's where I've been getting, I mean, loads of abuse for saying that. And just not, this is the thing, you can not criticize a player and people will throw abuse at you like you've just called their mother the worst name under the sun. No, it's a footballer. We've all got opinions, and don't get carried away. I'm not getting carried away by Darwin Núñez. But the reason I talk about this is Luis Diaz is that player who you should be getting carried away with. That's what Liverpool's problem is. You're so focused on Darwin Núñez, you don't realise you've got an absolute gem in Luis Diaz on that left-hand side. Get rid of the injuries. If he has a full season, that's your replacement for Mane. I don't think, maybe not necessarily 20 Premier League goals in a season, but certainly match-winning performances and performances that I think in the biggest moments, I felt like that against Man City, by the way, as well. Yes, he missed a couple of chances, but it just, when you've got a player who is so dangerous, that opposition will never rest. They'll never feel comfortable in a game. And I think Luis Diaz does do that. And that's how I felt watching him against Man United. Every time he got the ball, I was worried. When Darwin Núñez got the ball, I wasn't worried. When Salah got the ball, I wasn't worried. When Luis Diaz got the ball, I was a bit like, ooh, and you're on the edge of your seat and you're a little bit like, ooh, you don't know what's going to happen. So I thought I'd put him in there, not just for his performance this week, but I think probably since he's come back from injury and obviously the whole thing with his dad, I think he's been brilliant. I think he's been arguably Liverpool's best forward. The goals haven't necessarily been there to the same extent. Put him on penalties, he'd have the same amount of goals as Salah. So, yeah. One more mention. I will say Andre Onana. He's been in my team of the week quite a few times. And it's strange because I almost don't think he's a great goalkeeper. But at the same time, I'm starting to really like him. Onana didn't come in with the same confidence I would have had if, you know, when Alisson came into Liverpool, when Courtois went to Real Madrid. You see these proven goalkeepers move in. Donnarumma, even to a certain extent, at PSG. When Onana came in, it was almost like he's an unproven entity because he takes risks on the ball. Can he adapt to a faster pace in the Premier League that maybe those mistakes will be punished? And I think the most surprising thing for me is that he's been really poor with the ball a lot of the time, but he's actually been very good in terms of shot stopping. Take that Champions League out. That Champions League campaign has ruined everyone's perception of Onana. I think he's been absolutely fantastic all season. And I think there's a really good argument to say he's actually been the best goalkeeper in the league this season. Thought I'd give him a mention. That's no bias, by the way, because, you know, if he ends up being the best goalkeeper in the league this season and the PFA or the players, writers or whatever agree with that and put him in there, that proves me massively wrong, because when I was watching him in the Champions League, a lot of the time I was going, this goalkeeper's not good enough. So, you know, there's no bias there. That's just me saying that I'll probably end up being wrong, if anything. Okay, let's move on. Let's do a two lies and a truth. We haven't done one of these properly for quite a while. We did one with Vince last week. We missed a couple of weeks prior to that. So let's get a two lies and a truth on the go. This is the part of the show where I give you three stories, three crazy football stories. Two are lies, one is true. You have to guess which one is the true story. Starting off with story number one. A 90-year-old Argentinian woman avoided being kidnapped by Hamas members in Israel thanks to mentioning Lionel Messi. This led to one of the attackers asking to take a photo with her and then leave. She said, "I'm from where Messi is from," to the attacker, who took a photo and then left. Story number two. German police have issued an arrest warrant for ex-Bayern Munich midfielder Javi Martinez. This was after he was alleged to have sold fans signed pirate DVDs of their treble-winning season. Or is it story number three? Faroe Islands First Division side Klaksvik have signed a pigeon. Graham, the pigeon, was signed on loan as part of a sponsorship deal. Three stories. You have to guess which one is the true story. I'm going to tell you at the end of the show, which isn't too far away. So stay tuned. You'll have the answer to that. Three crazy stories. We do a weekend treble. We've been trying to do a weekend treble every week where I give you three guaranteed selections that are definitely going to come in on the weekend. You back it and you win some money. It's my way of giving back to you. However, as of late, we've gone like this. We were like that and we were up and now we're like that. The point of this weekend treble is profit at the end of the season. So don't panic. We're going to get there. And this week is definitely coming in. This week's selection. Selection number one, Newcastle versus Tottenham. Both teams to score. Selection number two, Juventus or draw. That's the double chance against Torino. And selection three is Man United or draw. The double chance away at Bournemouth. £10 on, £24, £64 back. There's your profit. That'll take us back up. Just trust me, guys. Please. Anything else we got to talk about this week? I wanted to cover a few things, but the problem is I've been speaking so much about Man United recently. I know that you guys must be sick of it. So I am trying to take my foot off that Man United pedal and maybe on a different direction. So why don't we talk about relegation? Let's do the relegation. Let's look at the bottom half of the Premier League. Who do we think is getting relegated? The points deductions seem to change every week. So this is a ridiculous season where we actually don't know who's the best team, who's the worst team, who's most likely to get relegated. Usually at this point, you kind of know, you know, these two teams have been cut adrift. At this point, anyone could get a points deduction and anyone could end up in that bottom three. Yes, that creates some drama, but also it also means kind of like you don't know where you land until the season's over. And it could be that the season finishes and we still don't know the outcome. This cannot happen. You know, if you're going to do points deductions, if you're going to bring charges, this needs to be done not retrospectively. It needs to be with the next season in mind. It needs to be, you've got 3 months between, or 2 months between, you know, the finish of the season, the last game in May, June, July, and then bang, straight for August. You need to know where you stand as a football club, regardless of whether you've broken rules. I just don't like this whole retrospective banning, charging for the current season. Because we had that with Everton. They thought they'd lost a certain amount of points. Then they've appealed, and then they've got reinstated a couple of points. And then there's another points deduction. We need some clarity whilst the season's running, and we need some consistency, because every team is at the moment going to be treated differently just because you're not a Manchester City. You know, when those charges drop, who knows where we're going to be? And I don't think that should be in the middle of a season. It should happen at the end of a season. You can prepare all you like. This is when your trial is going to happen. This is when the hearing is going to happen. You've got X amount of time to appeal. And if, you know, whoever, the jurors, the judge, don't agree with it or do uphold the appeal, then great. Get that sorted, ready for next season. At this point, it almost feels like a relegation battle, which normally is exciting and tense. What's the point? Because we don't know how it's going to end up 2 months down the line after the season finished. So, yeah, not a fan. Who do I think is going to get relegated? If I really had to stick my neck on the line, I think Luton have been brilliant and I've loved watching them play. And actually, at the start of the season, I thought they would be a dark horse. I don't think they, you know, people didn't respect what they've done and what they can achieve with the stadium, with the atmosphere, with a different style of football. They weren't going to come in and just put 11 men behind the ball. They were going to try and stick to an attacking philosophy, and they've done that and they've been brilliant at it. I do hope they stay up, but to a certain extent, it's almost like, can they sustain that? They've had a few injuries recently, which has kind of affected them, but I don't know. It's almost like at this point, yes, I want to see them attacking and doing this great football, but maybe can they be a little bit more pragmatic? Have they got a plan B where they can really sit in, make it difficult for sides, not just be that attacking threat over and over again? Maybe make Kenilworth Road a difficult place to come and score a goal. Can you sit men behind the ball and try and soak up some pressure and get something on the counter-attack? That's where you're going to get your points, your 3 points, those difficult fixtures where you make it really horrible for a team to come and take points off you. And those can be the difference between you staying up and going down. At the moment, it's a bit chaotic. It's basketball. It's you score, we score. It's very difficult to kind of call a game when Luton are playing. You never know who's going to win. But at the same time, you can't argue because it's great. Everton, look, if they don't get any more points deductions, I think they'll be fine. Sheffield United, as much as they, you know, they've been scoring of late, they've been grabbing goals, they've been a little less leaky. And I only say that because they've not been conceding 6 or 5 for the last couple of games, but they have been scoring. And there is a little bit of that Chris Wilder effect, and he gets a lot of criticism. I quite like him, but there is a belief amongst the Sheffield United players that didn't exist probably a month ago. Do feel like, you know, especially with that late goal the other week, they're not gonna stay up, but they can make it interesting for themselves. If they get 3 points next week, then maybe, who knows? You never know. Anything can happen in this league. Burnley, for me, they're one of those teams where I think they're probably the most disappointing of all the teams that came up, considering how they won the championship. That is how you wanted to see them in the Premier League. And I don't know if they... It was strange. I remember the opening game of the season. I hadn't looked too much into Burnley's signings because I didn't see much movement in either the January or the summer transfer window this season and the start of this season. But Burnley seemed to just sign nobody. And it was almost like, we're going to dominate the same way we did last season, this season, with the same players. Well, that 11 is nowhere near good enough. And when they lined up against Man City for the opening game, I looked at that team and I was watching it with my friends and I was like, are they serious? Like, have I not noticed that this is the team that Burnley are going to... this is their front foot. This is their best foot forward. And I just looked at it and I thought City are just going to blow them away. They beat them comfortably. But since then, I don't think they've even really got close. A couple of decent results maybe here and there. But yeah, Burnley, real disappointment for me. I'm a bit gutted that they've come up and done that. Do you know what I don't want to see? And... West Brom fans and Norwich fans are going to hate me for saying it, but I want to see someone different. I am sick of West Brom up, down, Norwich up, down, Watford up, down. Like, just give me someone different. And I think that's why everyone were really happy that Luton got promoted last season. And then we're going to be a little bit gutted that they're going to get relegated. Because how boring is it when Norwich are there and West Brom are there and they're up and they're down? I just want, that's why I think a lot of people will want the likes of a Coventry, even a Sunderland, who I haven't seen in the Premier League for a while. And, you know, Leeds are always good value for money when they're in the Premier League as well. So I'm not too disappointed. It's not a bitter rivalry from my point of view, because Leeds have never been in my lifetime. They've certainly never really competed with Man United. So yeah, Leeds wouldn't be too bad. Southampton, Leicester, you know, I always watched Leicester in the Premier League, always really enjoyed them. And I think, yeah, they're far too good for that league. But can someone else get promoted this season? Not West Brom, Watford or Norwich, because what's the point? It's just boring. You're going to go down in two seasons' time. Yeah, that sounds bitter. I don't care. Middle of the show, I gave you two lies and a truth. I said I'd give you the answer. Well, here's the answer. The first story was the 90-year-old woman who apparently said that she was from Argentina to some members of Hamas to stop her getting attacked and kidnapped. Was that the true story? Story number two was the German police issuing a warrant for the arrest of Javi Martinez for selling fake DVDs. And then story number three was the Faroe Islands signing a pigeon. Which one did you think was the true story? Were you right? Well, the true story was the Argentine woman who apparently, some 90-year-old woman, mentioned Messi whilst being attacked by Hamas and they let her go. And that's a true story. Don't ask me how I find these stories. Sometimes they just pop up in my Twitter feed. Sometimes I actually do some heavy research, extensive research, to find something obscure in the world of football. I promised you at the start of the show also a fantastic fan-captured goal of the week, and this is brilliant. This is Mickey van der Ven's absolute storming finish into the top corner for Tottenham. And this is a brilliant goal, but the way you watch it go in, have a look, it's amazing. How good is that? I absolutely love that. Brilliant from Mickey van der Ven. And actually, hey, let's give him a mention. What a player. If he hadn't been injured at that point, I think Tottenham would have been a lot further along. I think the top four would have been almost secured. They would have been the fourth best team in the league. As it stands, they've got him back and they are pushing on a little bit. But what a signing Mickey van der Ven's been. The pace that he's shown. And he looked gangly and awkward. And it looked like, you know, when Tottenham brought him in, it's almost like, is he the answer? But boy, is he the answer. And do you know what? He'd probably be the answer to most defensive problems that most teams in the Premier League have, and that is any of the top clubs. You know, you look at Mickey van der Ven this season, which Premier League team wouldn't want him? I think he'd probably fit in anywhere. And that's you know, no disrespect to Tottenham, but, you know, van der Ven may not play Champions League football this season. And is he up there with one of the best centre-halves in the league? I actually think he is. I think he's brilliant. Absolutely love him. And what a finish that was. Yeah, brilliant on his left foot. Bang, straight into the top corner. Massive goal, massive game, massive player. And yeah, what a brilliant signing, up there with some of the best signings. And do you know what I'm going to do next week? Oh, I say next week. We've got a guest episode next week. The week after, I am going to do my best 11 of transfers. So transferred in players this season. I'm going to do my best 11. So make sure you stay tuned for that. It'll be out in a couple of weeks. Look, guys, I really appreciate you joining me this week. Make sure that you are there next week, next Wednesday. We have got special guest Michael Tropper coming on, and that'll be a brilliant, brilliant episode. We're looking forward to speaking to him. I'm sure he's got some great stories. Newcastle, Sunderland, Cardiff, some big clubs, Ipswich. So yeah, that'd be great speaking to him. So make sure you're with us for that. If you haven't hit that subscribe button, hit it. If you haven't hit that notification button so you get notifications when an episode pops up, do it, because that way you won't miss the Michael Tropper interview that we've got coming up next week. So yeah, do it. Hey, like the video if you want. I know some of you do. I know some of you probably haven't even got to this point in the episode and you're long gone. But if you've made it to YouTube, which only like 1% of you do, it's fine. I understand. Like the video. We really appreciate it. It helps with the algorithm. Guys, I'm back next week, next Wednesday, and every Wednesday till the end of the season. Thanks for joining me. Have a great week. Speaking wisdom into my mind. Tell me stories of all that are great. Cherish these days before it's too late.